Hi, welcome to Female Trouble. I'm Quinn Kelly, and this is a Baltimore Sun podcast spotlighting some of the area's most interesting and accomplished women. This week on Female Trouble, we're doing something a little bit different. If you haven't listened before, this is usually a long-form conversation podcast with one guest that spans their life and career. And though this conversation generally fits that format, we centered it around a Baltimore Sun series that ran online and in print called Bridging the Divide, which is about the struggle to move past segregated schools. Bridging the Divide is a four-part series by reporters Liz Bowie and Erica Green that ran in March, examining the challenging redistricting process in Baltimore County, the struggles of a new East Baltimore school, the ways de facto segregation persists in integrated Howard County schools, and an experiment in the challenges and rewards of integration in Hartford, Connecticut. I'd highly recommend you go read those four stories, which we will link to in the show notes of this episode, and then return to this conversation, which is with Annie Milley, Marketing Director of Live Baltimore. Live Baltimore is a nonprofit that advocates for city living, and much of Annie's work focuses on encouraging middle-class families in Baltimore to see the good in the neighborhood public schools they have often passed over for private schools. Annie and I only touched on a small part of what the Bridging the Divide series covers, with a focus on city schools and the series serving as a springboard for our conversation. Here's Annie Milley. What is Live Baltimore?
So Live Baltimore is a nonprofit organization, an independent nonprofit organization that is about to be going into its 20th year of operation. And we are committed to helping grow the population of Baltimore City. So we provide all types of resources for people who might be interested in moving to Baltimore City. We can connect you with home buying incentives. We can tell you about all of the neighborhoods in Baltimore City, of which there are 278. We can help you find the right place to settle down and just connect you with any resources about living here.
It may seem obvious, but why is it important to grow the population of Baltimore City?
So when people are debating, I think especially right now, people are talking a lot about police funding or education funding or, you know, funding this or funding that. Well, there is no funding if there's not a residential tax base in the city. So having a strong residential tax base is incredibly important. It's incredibly important to any city, to any place. But it's especially important here because we have a lot of need in our city and we need those tax revenue resources to be able to support the infrastructure that we need to support here.
Are you originally from Baltimore?
So I grew up in Baltimore County in the Owings Mills, Reisterstown area. And I think I had a bit of a different experience in Baltimore County than a lot of my peers in Baltimore County, because I think a lot of my peers grew up being really afraid of the city or uncomfortable with the city. And I was, even though I was raised in Baltimore County, I was always brought up to believe that Baltimore City was this magical place where all these great things were happening. So from an early age, I did spend a lot of time here. And then I've lived here as a resident of Baltimore City for about 13 years.
Yeah, I was curious about, that's interesting you speak to that experience. How much of your job is addressing real problems in Baltimore versus perceived problems? And what are some of the maybe incorrect stereotypes or misconceptions that you come up against?
I would say most of my job is dealing with perceived problems. I think one thing that people don't realize is how large Baltimore City is. And so if you were to just see Baltimore City portrayed in the media, you might think that our city looked one way. If you've seen one of those television shows, I won't name them by name.
We have no idea what you're talking about.
I don't know. I'm sure you don't. So if you've seen the portrayal of Baltimore, you might think of the city as one way. But the city is very big, and there's a lot of different types of places in the city. Even from one neighborhood to the next, there's a lot of different neighborhoods have their own character and their own strengths. And so I think a lot of my job is about helping people to understand that this is a big city, 81 square miles, I believe. I said it wrong in an interview recently. I was really embarrassed, but I think it's 81 square miles. And so it's a large place. And so that's something that I think people don't understand. And then there's no question that, you know, we're not perfect. There definitely are issues going on in Baltimore City. But the people who are thinking about moving here that we're working with, they can generally see past those things. And they're interested in urban living. They understand the benefits of being in a city. They want what the city can offer. And so I think for us, it's more about helping them to find the right place and helping them to understand the nuances.
I wanted to talk to you about the Sun's Bridging the Divide series mm-hmm. and education in the city. Sure. I know that Live Baltimore has been working to encourage city residents to look at their own neighborhood schools, mm-hmm. middle-class city residents, before looking to private schools. And so I was hoping you could expand a bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I said Live Baltimore is entering its 20th year as an organization. And so the first 15 or so years of our existence, we were really focused on bringing empty nesters back into the city and helping young professionals relocate into the city. And we had a lot of success contributing to the stabilization of Baltimore's population, but we still weren't really seeing the growth that we were after. And so there was a look inward, and the organization said to itself, what is it that we're not doing, and what can we do to achieve this growth that we're looking for? So there was a realization that we've been trying to fill a bucket that has a hole in the bottom, and that's something that's really challenging to do. And so for the first time, starting around 2013, when I came to Live Baltimore, we began to focus on families with children. And so in 2013, when I came, we started doing research, talking to families all over the city about what their needs were to help them to stay in the city. And we created a program called Way to Stay. And so that's our resident retention program. And that's where my life became mostly about Baltimore City Schools and learning about Baltimore City Schools. So I had the privilege of spending about 18 months learning the ins and outs of what the educational landscape is in Baltimore City. And it, I used to tell people, I thought I was going to launch an entire program in 6 months. And 18 months later, I had just figured out education. So there's a lot for families to understand, and there's a lot for them to learn. And so what we are doing now is helping them to connect with local schools. We're helping to share information about schools that they might not have heard of. And we have a number of events for families where they can come and learn more about what their education options are in Baltimore City.
Correct me if I'm wrong. It seems like millennials are attracted to Baltimore and to cities in general. Then it's when it comes time to having children, of course, and maybe into their 30s, that they move away. Mm-hmm. How do you kind of reconcile that? And what do you have to do to make millennials want to stay here?
So our program focuses on three areas that millennials told us they needed to have more information about. So we talk about schools, space, and support. Schools is clearly what it is. They need more information about schools. Space, they often want to know about larger houses because they moved in next to a bar and it was a lot of fun and it's a tiny little row house, and then they get married and they have a child and they need, maybe living next to that bar isn't the best thing for them anymore. They need to move someplace else. So we can tell them about neighborhoods where they can do that. And then support, they want to connect with one another and they want to have social experiences both for themselves and for their kids. One of the things that we do around schools is we hold these events called, we call them school socials. So we will go out to mostly bars because they get the best attendance, but we'll go out to a bar or to a brewery and we will invite families to come and just to learn about what their options are for education in Baltimore City. And it's been a really fascinating process because at the most recent event that we had two couples show up that were there, as I said, to learn about school choice options in Baltimore City. And two of those couples had recently married and were not yet expecting a child. But even just getting married and being city residents, they were starting to face questions from their family about, all right, you've had your fun in the city. When are you going to, now that you're married, when are you coming back to the county, or when are you going to move back to the suburbs? So millennials, they don't want to do that necessarily. That's not how they see themselves. They have an identity as a city dweller. They enjoy the walkability. They enjoy the restaurants and the life that's so vibrant here and the life that they've built here. So they want to stay, but they need to be able to answer questions from their family, from influencers about how they're going to make it work here. And so I think the biggest thing that we can do for them is to help them to answer those questions so that they can feel confident in their choice to remain here and to continue to build their life here with kids.
I know that you said in the Bridging the Divide series that there are city residents who aren't even looking at their neighborhood school at all. Why is that the case?
I think it's the case because it's not a secret that the narrative about Baltimore City Schools has not been positive. There has been negative attention on Baltimore City Schools for quite some time, and people allow the broader narrative about Baltimore City Public Schools to define their beliefs about every single school. So that includes their neighborhood school. And it is, you know, it's true that a lot of people don't look at their neighborhood school, and we know that because when they come to our events, we'll ask them, what school are you zoned for? And it's actually shocking to us how many people are, how many people say that they don't know. So, you know, schools do not have a marketing department. Public schools do not have a marketing department. The public relations folks at North Avenue at Baltimore City Schools, you know, their job is not to publicize individual schools or to market individual schools. They are there to talk about the district as a whole. And so because of that, and through no fault of theirs, individual school accomplishments have often just gone unbroadcast. And as a resident, just a regular resident without kids, there hasn't been a good way for people to experience those schools. And that's what we're trying to change.
Beyond marketing and PR and narrative, what are the actual changes that people need to see in Baltimore to retain more residents as well?
I think strength builds strength. And people need to see other people like themselves making the choices that they want to make. I think that as more families make the choice to stay in Baltimore, there will be a snowball effect of more families staying in Baltimore. And I guess I'll illustrate that in this way. When we were doing research to find out what made neighborhoods desirable for families, one of the surprising things that we learned was that families are making their choice about where to live based on which neighborhoods have lots of kids in the neighborhood. So families want to live someplace where there is, and we coined the term, child density. So they want a high child density. They want a street where there's lots of kids, their kids same age. They want to hear children's laughter in the streets. They want to hear kids running around and playing ball, and they want to hear basketballs, and they want their kids to be able to have an experience where they have friends living very close by. So I think that's a really important factor. I think that as families find neighborhoods and places where there's lots of other families, being social, making friendships, forming bonds of social capital, I think that's one of the biggest things that's going to really turn the tide and make Baltimore a place where more families are choosing to stay and raise their kids. I personally live in Northeast Baltimore, and there are so many families in Northeast Baltimore. And there's been a very conscious effort by community organizers there, community organizers with children, to form groups where families can connect and they can spend time together. And I just was, before I came here, I was dropping off eggs at the local coffee shop for an Easter egg hunt stuffing that's being sponsored by a group called HL Sprouts that connects families in the Northeast. So I think that that's one of the biggest changes that would be beneficial for more families staying here is building those social connections and making neighborhoods have a greater child density overall.
It's difficult because no one wants to be the first, right? Like so many of these things are solved when it comes to a critical mass.
Yes.
But how do you get to that point?
One of the things that we try and do with our program is be intentional about organizing families together. So I mentioned that we have some of these, we call them school socials, and sometimes they take place in bars and restaurants, but sometimes they also take place in people's homes. So it's about bringing neighbors together who share common values and common desires about what they want for their life and helping to guide them through conversations about staying here and about where to send their kids to school and helping families come to decisions as groups, because you're right, the critical mass is really important.
Again, quoted in the story, research by Live Baltimore showed that middle-class families with children from kindergarten to fifth grade leave the city schools at a rate of about 20% a year, often because they believe the schools are inadequate. So how do you address that when it's families who, it seems from the statistic at least, are willing to give the city schools a try? It's not a matter of like knowing where their zoned school is, like you mentioned, and then it doesn't work out. How do you come back from that?
Well, full disclosure, that research was actually done by BINYA, the Baltimore Neighborhood Indicators Alliance. I just want to be clear on that. I don't want to take credit for other people's work, but it was part of the Grow Baltimore committee that Live Baltimore served on with BINYA and a project that we worked on together. You know, I think that one answer to that is, again, that critical mass. I think as people start to feel the draw of moving away and numbers decrease, if your friends start to move away, you become more likely to move away as well. One of the things that Binya talks about a lot is commute time is a major indicator for whether or not people remain in the city. And so oftentimes we encounter people who, you know, one spouse is working in Baltimore City and one spouse is working in D.C. And so there's a trade-off of one person is making a very long commute and the other person has a convenient commute. And oftentimes people get to a point where the spouse who's been making the long commute says, all right, it's my turn. We need to go someplace where it's more convenient for me and you need to take the turn of making the longer commute. So those are the types of things that happen that start to erode those families who have chosen to stay, and then it becomes easier for the others to follow in their path. So I think that's one thing. I think that also middle school programming in the city is not yet as strong as some of the elementary school programming, and that is one of the reasons that you will start to see families leave. Families, even, you know, I mentioned that we see families coming to us who don't yet have kids wanting to learn about education options. Similarly, we have a lot of families with toddlers, kids my daughter's age, who are asking us questions about middle school. And so it's going to be very important that the middle school offerings in the city become more desirable for these families so that they don't start to worry about middle school and make other decisions starting around third grade.
Do you have examples of success stories of Baltimore City schools that people in that neighborhood might not be aware that they've been successful?
Absolutely. Yes. So three of my favorite schools that I like to talk about right now, Federal Hill Prep is one of them, which is located surprisingly in Federal Hill. Mount Royal, which is located basically on MICA's campus in Bolton Hill. And then Garrett Heights, which is located in Lauraville in Northeast Baltimore. Things that are exciting about each of these schools, and I guess I'll talk about Garrett Heights first. So Garrett Heights had some families in the neighborhood who had toddlers, and they started thinking about the fact that they really wanted to send their kids to the neighborhood school. So before their kids were even school age, they went to the school principal and they said, how can we start working with you now to make this a school that we will be excited to send our kids to? And one of the things that was really interesting to them was the Montessori philosophy in education. And so they started talking to the principal about how could they make Garrett Heights a Montessori school. And through the work of these parents, they were able to start piloting a Montessori program at Garrett Heights. And Garrett Heights now has a 10-year strategic plan to become an authentic Montessori school. And they're adding Montessori classrooms every single year. The Baltimore Montessori Public Charter School is a charter school with one of the longest wait lists in the city. So we know that there's a high demand for Montessori programming. And even in just the small amount of assistance that Live Baltimore has been able to give to Garrett Heights, the increase that they saw in students and in interest from neighborhood families last year was overwhelming. And I expect that to happen again this year. Mount Royal is another example because they have this amazing principal named Job Grotsky, who has been there for 4 years. He is a professionally trained musician who plays 30 different instruments, and he brought a real focus on the arts to that school. And that school has an arts everyday curriculum where the arts are integrated into everything that they do there. And again, they're really working with the community. So that's a really exciting place. And Federal Hill Prep, I was actually did a tour there on Wednesday and was just, every time I go into that school, I'm reminded of what an outstanding place it is. And it's not so much there that they have any special curriculum like Montessori or arts integration, but they have this amazingly dedicated group of neighborhood parents who go above and beyond to make sure that that school has everything that the kids there need.
I don't know if it's probably just my perception, but working here at the Baltimore Sun, it seems lately education and Baltimore City education is such a hot button issue. I mean, very few things get people as passionate as, you know, our stories about education. Do you have any theories as to why there's so much attention on the city school district right now? Of course, there's the budget, but
I mean, I think that it's hard to say a lot more beyond the budget right now because it has been such a big issue. But education is always going to be really important to people because it impacts their children. And I have a 2-year-old, and I just began to realize what it means to be making decisions for another person. And you become very invested, and those decisions become very personal, and then you become very passionate about how things are going to impact your child. So that's always going to be a really, I think, visceral topic for people.
I know I'm kind of going back to this a lot, but one of the themes of the Bridging the Divide series is kind of about how no one has bad intentions, but it's really hard to convince people to look beyond themselves and look beyond their own families, the families that are able to afford to send their children to a private school or move to a different district. I mean, besides the community building and these events, how can you convince people to sometimes take the hit or do the thing that's for the greater good if they can't feel its immediate impact?
I think people are feeling its immediate impact. There was a great op-ed written by a group of parents who we have the privilege of working with, and it was a response to another op-ed by a Baltimore Sun reporter. And I think...
And is that Trisha Bishop?
Yes.
Yes, yeah, editorial page.
You know, and in speaking with those families from that school that she had described, they were very upset with what she said because they felt that she was insinuating that they were somehow endangering or harming their children by the choices that they had made. They are experiencing the benefits of sending their kids to their neighborhood school and in coming together and working hard to make the school a better place for everyone. So I think it would be inaccurate to say that people don't experience the immediate benefits of it. I think that people do. I think that as those parents so well stated in their response, it's not a choice that's for everyone, but I believe that as more people make that choice, it will become a choice that's easier for more people.
What are some of the biggest frustrations you encounter in your job or the misinformation that you hear the most?
In thinking about schools, since that's what we're talking about, I get frustrated when people think that Roland Park Elementary is the only school that's worth talking about in Baltimore City. And that's not to say anything bad about Roland Park Elementary. It's an amazing place and a fantastic school. But I think that it's important that people hear more stories about more places, because just having one example doesn't serve anyone. So I think that that's frustrating. I definitely get frustrated when people aren't willing to give their neighborhood school a chance. I think everybody should tour their neighborhood school. I've toured my neighborhood school. I think you're doing yourself a disservice if you don't do that. If anybody comes to the charter waitlist events that Live Baltimore puts on, they'll hear me give a presentation called Great Schools is Bad for Baltimore. There's a website called greatschools.org that rates schools across the country, and they do so in a way that I believe strongly is very unfair to urban districts, and Baltimore included in that. And so I get very frustrated when people come to me and they say that they're making a decision whether to look at their neighborhood school, whether to go in the doors of their neighborhood school based on a rating that they saw on the internet, not understanding what that rating comes from. That's one of the things that frustrates me immensely.
What does Live Baltimore make of the new census data that shows that Baltimore City population is at a nearly 100-year low?
So, you know, people, because we exist to promote residential living in Baltimore City, I think people don't necessarily want to hear us say that the census is inaccurate. But I do think that we believe that that census number will be adjusted. When you look at the data over the past 5 years, that number sticks out as statistically questionable because we've seen fluctuations of about 500 residents per year for a number of years. And so a number that large strikes us as odd because there's no indicators to really suggest that that has occurred. And I guess I'll give you this example. From 2010 through 2015, the number of residential home sales in Baltimore City has almost doubled. Last year, we had almost 9,000 residential home sales. And in 2010, that number was like 5,500. So home sales are doing very well. We also know that since 2010, we've had 15,000 new residential units come online in Baltimore City, while at the same time, our vacancy rate has not changed much at all, certainly hasn't gone up. So when we look at those types of numbers, the census data, it seems off to us, just honestly. But also, we know that there were some changes to our population in the group quarters segment of the census data. And group quarters includes things like housing on college campuses, senior living facilities, and also prisons. I think we can all remember that a large prison closed in the city of Baltimore during the time that the census was taken, and that prison housed about 1,200 residents, and those individuals would have been counted in that group quarter segment. So I'll be interested to see how the number might be refined.
Kind of on the population note, I was hoping you could tell me about some of the areas of the city where the school population has almost flipped, because areas like Locust Point, things like that, where they have become more gentrified or more built up in the housing.
Locust Point, you know, I can't say what the demographics of how the demographics of Locust Point specifically have changed. So commenting on a change in demographics there is going to be a challenge for me, unfortunately. I do think, though, in a neighborhood like Locust Point, you do see the school being utilized by more residents who come from the immediate neighborhood. And that's definitely evident if you visit that school. It's a matter of all of the residents who located there when they were young professionals and single young professionals and then paired up and started a family and liked it so much that they decided to stay. So yeah, that's definitely a place where we see more families opting into their zone school. All of the schools in what we refer to as the peninsula, so in the Riverside neighborhood, in the Federal Hill neighborhood, so Federal Hill Prep, Thomas Johnson, Francis Scott Key, all of those schools are being utilized by their in-zone population, I think more than they were at other times in the recent past. Mount Royal is one of those as well, where more families from Bolton Hill have become interested in sending their kids to that school. And so the school is beginning to better reflect the neighborhood. But there's still a lot of neighborhoods where the school does not reflect the population of the neighborhood. And I think those are the places where we have the most opportunity.
Why are you passionate about this work?
I'm passionate about this work for, I guess, a number of reasons. I think cities are wonderful places full of beautiful architecture, fantastic cultural amenities. I think it's a fun place to live. I think all of the restaurants and options for entertainment are all really fun and great places to visit that make your life just more interesting. I think from a values perspective, I'm personally really bothered by the idea of flight as a concept. I think it's important that as a society we stick together and we say we don't make personal choices that negatively impact our culture and our society. So I think it's really important to live here and to not run away from the challenges that the city faces, but to live here, to put down roots, to invest in the city through your property taxes, and to be faced, literally, to see the challenges that exist in our city every day. I often say you have to see poverty to solve poverty. And I think that by living in the suburbs and shutting your eyes and pretending that all of this isn't happening, I don't think that we're working to make the world a better place. And one of the best ways that we can support the city and to help the city solve its problems is by making residential investment here.
Annie, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to my conversation with Annie Millie, Live Baltimore's marketing director. Again, you can find the Baltimore Sun's Bridging the Divide series by reporters Liz Bowie and Erica Green in the show notes of this episode at baltimoresun.com/femaletrouble. If you're interested in Baltimore City education, you might enjoy my interview with City Schools CEO Sonia Santelises, which was episode 16 of this podcast. You can find Female Trouble on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts. We're also on Twitter at FMLTrouble. Our theme song is Dope Girls by Shifty featuring TT the Artist. Thanks again, and we'll be back next week.